This video is brought to you by Skillshare. Skillshare is an online learning community for creative people where millions get to explore together. Skillshare has got thousands of classes. As artists, you're going to love discovering topics in fine art, illustration, and more. Lots of Skillshare classes are under 60 minutes. With short lessons, you can fit them into the busiest of schedules. I thought at first I was going to watch a Skillshare class about marketing, but actually, I ended up watching Storytelling for Leaders, How to Craft Stories That Matter with Keith Yamashita. Got me thinking that I could learn all the marketing skills that I wanted, but that actually, the heart of marketing is being able to tell a good story. Skillshare is also super affordable, and annual subscription is less than $10 a month. The first 500 of our subscribers to click this link, which is also in the video description below, will get a 2-month free trial of premium membership so you can explore your creativity. Hello, I'm Professor Lou. Welcome to our live stream. I'm here with Art Prof teaching artists Eloise Sherrod and Alex Rowe. We are talking today about imposter syndrome for artists. Pretty common. I think a lot of us do suffer to some degree, some version of imposter syndrome in our lives. If you would like to grow as an artist, but you can't afford an art class and you're stuck in quarantine, we've got everything you need here at Art Prof. Critiques and tutorials. All right, imposter syndrome. Let's start with you, Alex. Do you suffer from any degree of imposter syndrome as an artist?
Should we define imposter syndrome first?
That is a good idea. Why don't you do that, Eloise?
Okay. Imposter syndrome is when you, even if you're a very successful person, are convinced that you're a fraud on the inside and that somehow everyone's going to discover your big secret, which is that you're making things up as you go along. Is that a good, accurate
definition? I'd say so. Works for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I feel. So let's call that imposter syndrome. Yeah.
So Alex, where do you see yourself feeling imposter syndrome as an artist?
For me, it's specifically with professional life. It's hard sometimes to sit down and paint, but once I get in that groove, that's my happy space. I feel good. Professionally, it's that thing of like, I've been working as a barista for about 6.5 years now. And that imposter syndrome of like that terror that people will like, you know, like find out. It's like, oh, like you just work in food service industry, you know?
And Eloise, where do you see imposter syndrome in your life?
I think it comes from when I ever need to ask anyone for help. So say in my day job, like working in film is a very collaborative medium, and that's just sort of a truth of it. But every single time that I encounter a situation where I don't know the answer or I need to rely on someone else's skill set and just let them function, I become convinced that this is a failing and proof that I am not actually what I'm worth. And it haunts me. And also I become very upset about like the integrity of my actual artwork. I think the actual producing of artwork is something that gives me a lot of joy. But when I start comparing myself to other artists, it drives me up the wall.
Yeah. And by the way, if you don't know this, this stream is actually a part of a playlist that we call Artist Wellness, because artists have some issues, don't we? Wouldn't you say so? We have a couple of problems that we tend to grapple with. And one of them is comparing yourself to other artists. I mean, who does not do that? Everybody does that. It doesn't matter who you are. I mean, I think people do it to different degrees, but it's really difficult to be an artist and not see that person whose career is just that much better than yours, or the person who can do painting that much better than you. So it's a really, really tricky thing to be dealing with. I'm wondering, Alex, why it is that somebody who has your painting skill set, which quite frankly, most of the time when I look at your gouache paintings, Alex, it just makes me want to cry tears of jealousy when I look at your gouache work. By the way, speaking of gouache, You guys, if you enter the Art Prof Spring Raffle, you can win the original gouache painting that Alex made in our gouache tutorial for a $150 one-time donation. So that is an option. So Alex, how do you explain this to me? Because I don't get how you can possibly think that. Like, I honestly do not get it. Can you explain better?
Yeah, it's in a way, it's really simple. That took a long time to understand. Like, to be real for a second, like growing up and in middle school and high school, like it was like I was always like the art kid. And I think that's a very common thing for artists, is that they were always the artist in their class. And then I was growing up and blessed with really supportive people in my life who were like, oh, you're going to make it. You're going to be working at Disney one day. You know, you're going to be owning that place. And then I grow up and here I am. And a lot of it was really hard when I first started working in coffee, having that pressure behind me and then asking someone if they'd like it for here or to go. That was very hard because my mindset was not asphyxiated in my own exploration as an artist, as it should have been. It was asphyxiated in how
I made.
Do you
guys think it has something to do with expectations that you think other people have for you? That, oh, you said, I'm going to be an artist someday. And then all of a sudden, you are not Andy Warhol. And people go, oh my goodness, you're a failure. So I think some of it is maybe wrapped up in what we think other people are thinking about us. I don't know. Eloise, do you think that's true or not?
Absolutely. I mean, I think it just people, what people know about art is they know the successful creme de la creme people whose paintings sell for a bajillion dollars, and they don't have much of a lens on how hard it is to get to, say, a level of mastery where your work is as good as that, and then a level of, say, commercial success where people are buying your stuff and giving you that recognition. And so I think that there's this expectation with no understanding of the difficulty, but that doesn't matter when they're putting that on you and you are kind of trying to like fend for yourself and do things at your own rate. And then and then you have this sort of message bearing down on you that you're a failure. You are never going to amount to anything and you're not good enough. And everyone's going to
discover it. My solution to this is what I tell students, because I get a lot of students who do say things like that to me. Like, I failed. I didn't do it. And the thing is, it's just not that cut and dry when you're an artist. Things are not that obvious. Like, to me, what's cut and dry is this Olympic diver did not win the gold medal. That is very cut and dry. It's so defined. And what I have always liked about being an artist is that nothing is that concrete as an artist. For example, I am so happy we don't have to take an exam to get licensed to be an artist. I'm so happy that I don't have to be certified to say, now, Clara, you have permission to go make an oil painting. And so for me, there's a liberty in the lack of concrete milestones that you must achieve, because you can't go to law school and then just be like, hey, I think I'll be a lawyer now. I mean, you have to pass a bar exam. There's nothing around that. And so for me, I've always found that very reassuring. 10,000 Crows says, yes, our society has a very one-dimensional idea about what an artist is. Lisa H. is saying, just getting to the Olympics is incredible. Exactly! I mean, if I was at the Olympics, I'd be like, dude, I rock. Then again, I don't know. Maybe I'd be a different person if I was an athlete. I probably would be. Well, here's the thing. As a teacher, I definitely have been in lots of situations where a student asked me something and I honestly did not know. And as a teacher, you would think that's not a good look because you're supposed to have all these answers to what students want to know about. But I actually think it's important for students to know that you don't know everything. And so if a student says to me, oh, what about this? And I say, you know what? I don't know. So what I'll say to them is, I'll go look it up for you and I'll tell you next week. That's a teaching opportunity. What do you think about that, Alex? Or do you say, Clara, you suck. You don't know anything.
It's at not one of your classes, but having TA'd for other classes where the student says that and then storms out, those students ain't doing well. But yeah, I think that beyond art, that is one of the most important lessons I've learned, is like, even like professionally in like management roles and leadership roles at coffee shops and food service, like it's goes so far with building trust in people to say, oh, that's a good question, I don't know that. Rather than like, you can smell it a mile away if someone tries to BS their way through an answer they don't know.
Now, Eloise, has there been a situation recently where maybe somebody at work asked you to do something and you weren't 100% sure how to answer or how to do it, and maybe you had to ask for assistance? Have you had something like that happen lately or before?
Well, something that happened recently was someone threw out a proposal for a project, and it involved a certain technical skill, like using After Effects, the animation software. And I kind of tortured myself for hours, like trying to decide whether or not I would take this job, and like feeling like a massive fraud and failure. And I ended up solving it by doing like taking action. The action that I took in this specific situation was I created a mock-up of what my skill set would let me do, and sort of was like, is this what you had in mind? Because I was sort of supplying all these like very intense visions of what they were expecting, and when I showed it, they were like, oh yeah, that's exactly what we wanted. But what I'm trying to say is, like, sometimes, like, I consider that a form of, like, research. Like you were talking about, Clara, if a student asks you and you say, I don't know the answer, and you go and look it up, I consider that a form of that kind of research, where you're going out and doing something to gather more information, solve problems more effectively, and get a better sense of, like, what your actual capability is.
Yeah, and actually, I can tell you guys the one time, okay, I admit it, there was one time where I did have some imposter syndrome at a job. And it was when I was a gallery director, because I'd never been a gallery director before. I had taught, I had done all this artwork and my studio practice and everything, but I didn't know how to do that. And I had a student say to me a few weeks ago, because they got a job as an art director, and they said, but Clara, I've never been an art director before. I'm like, I know. And the people that hired you know, they see that on your resume. This is not you faking your way and saying, ooh, I was a pretend art director at one point. Yeah, for real. You know, it's not like you lied to them about your resume. And ultimately, I said to them a few months into the job, I said, well, could you handle it? Was it okay? And they were like, yeah, it's fine. And so, Alex, how do you explain why that student was so worried when really they were super capable and wonderful and it was fine?
My bias is that I think that it goes back to like how we, like Eloise was saying, and how like one of the comments said, we have a different concept of what art is in our world, that we ignore the hard work. Like there's a friend of mine who's a typographer, like, and she's giving lectures. She's being invited to consult. She is a success in her field. And in her first job out of school as a graphic designer, she joked with me, it's like, oh yeah, I Googled everything they asked me to do. Because I think, yeah, that you said the most refreshing thing is that they know that you don't have experience. They know that they are giving you that experience.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it is that I don't think anybody goes into any job knowing how to do everything. Tell me in the chat, when you guys started a new job, was there a learning curve? Was there some, even in something that you were already good at? Okay, so for example, I've been teaching for over a decade. Teaching is not new for me. But if I say, for example, started another job at a new school, there's a lot I would have to learn. I'd have to figure out the culture of the school. I'd have to figure out how the administration works. And then honestly, it would take me a year before I really would feel like I could understand that. And so I think that with any job, it's just inevitable. You're going to have to learn on the job. I mean, Eloise, have you had to learn on the job? And what have 100%. You been learning?
I mean, everything. I mean, everything. Like, it doesn't matter, for instance, if you have certain technical knowledge, if you don't know the culture of the organization you're working for, like, all the little, like, bits and bobs of, like, how you're supposed to approach people and who to go to for certain problems. And then there's also just wild cards you'll get sometimes, like a project that demands you kind of go above and beyond, and I have to Google things all the time. But that's why tools like that exist, I think.
Builder D is saying, I suppose you could say the only cut and dry thing is yes, you made something, or no, you didn't, and that's all you have control over. Exactly, for sure. Lux is saying, as a mentally ill artist, I always wonder if my struggles are, quote, enough. Alex, let's hear you respond to that statement.
That's a really powerful one. It's like, to be super like artsy and nerdy, there's a Leonard Cohen quote from a poem of his that I love on that topic. I have it over by my desk, which is why I bring it up, where it just says, in the poem he says, have I carved enough, my lord? And he says, child, you are bone. And it's like, ooh, like, and it's just very metal, but it's like, yeah, like,
Leonard Cohen!
It's so good. Like, yeah, like, and it's, I keep it by my desk because it reminds me, like, no, don't dig too deep. Like, be gentle with yourself, you know, like, work hard, practice, try hard every day, but also, like, watch Avatar on Netflix, you know? It's okay to, like, have that peace with yourself and take care of yourself.
Have you guys noticed that right now there's a lot of artists feeling guilt about not being productive about their work during the pandemic? Because of the lockdown, I think a lot of people are saying, okay, well, now I don't have to do that 1 hour commute anymore. In theory, I have more time to make artwork, and yet I'm struggling. And I just think that you can't give yourself such a hard time, because I sort of feel like, Eloise, for me, when I'm afraid to ask somebody a question because I think they're going to think I'm stupid, I think most of the time they are not thinking that way. I think it's a lot less about us than we think it is. Like, you know what students say to me all the time? They're always like, this professor hates me. And I actually say to the students, I say, I'm sorry to burst your bubble, but I don't think that professor thinks about you that much. So I just don't think it's as dramatic as maybe it is in our heads necessarily. Let's see, in the chat, Last Day says, after an internship I had ages ago, I went to an interview at an agency, became a creative director. I had major imposter syndrome. What I learned was the CCO believed in me and it worked out. Very cool. Yeah. Denise says, yeah, I think you never fully perfect a job. There's always more to learn. Yeah. Like, Alex, are you still learning things as an artist?
Absolutely. Like, day in, day out. And it's like, even though art is not my, like, day job, wake up in the morning, go to work as an artist, I learn something with every painting I do. Like, everything. And that's honestly why I still do it. If I ever painted a painting where I spend a couple hours on it, finish it, and it was perfect, I don't know if I'd paint anymore, because there's nothing more to learn about
it. It would not be so fun. It would be pretty boring, in fact, is what I would say. Eloise, do you think that a lot of this has to do with our idea of how we think we rank in the food chain? Is this what it is? Just us sort of comparing ourselves to other people and saying, well, I'm just not as smart as that person.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a scarcity mentality, right? Like, there's this idea of if there can only be one successful person in, like, any given field or cohort of people. And I would say a lot of things in our society kind of reinforce that. But I think it's also, like, there are so many, it's like I was saying before the stream, like, there are so many measures to success that are not taken into consideration. Like, I mean, what about being a good person? Like, I feel like so much of, like, success is, like, measured up as being, like, okay, like, you got this job, you made this many, like, commissions, you got these awards, But what about, like, what is, like, what about, like, giving back to your community in a, like, tangible way? What about, like, being an educator and successfully fostering new people in your field? I just think that we gotta be more forgiving with ourselves instead of sort of forcing ourselves to conform to a very limited
right.
view
and
of
I
success.
Think you also have to really prioritize what's important to you, because let me tell you guys, I don't know what this is, but I think this is sort of true about a lot of institutions, but I have found that the more prestigious the institution I teach at, the meaner everybody is, and that at the less prestigious institutions, everybody's nice. And I'm like, okay, this is really frustrating, because I think most people would say, yeah, I want to teach at the more prestigious institution because it looks better on paper. People will go, oh, wow, you teach at that school and everything. But you know what? If you teach at a really prestigious school and you don't like anybody there and your job is miserable, it's like, what are you really getting out of that? And I'm just finding that the longer I am out there in the field, the less I care about that kind of stuff, because it's just miserable when you're working with people that are just miserable themselves and just want to make everybody else around them feel just as bad. So I find that the success thing, I was totally seduced by that when I was younger. I was like, I don't teach at the top school. I want to teach only MFAs at the best. And now I'm like, you know what? I don't find that so interesting all the time. And actually, I find it more challenging to teach a broader range of skills. That is a bigger challenge for me as an artist. Oh, Lauren is in the chat. Lauren Welch, art prof, teaching artist in the house. Say hello to Lauren, you guys. And Lauren, can you tell us in the chat, do you have any version of imposter syndrome that you ever experience? So Alex, how do you handle this idea of this person's better than me? I'm never going to be as validated as this other artist.
First thing I think is just recognizing it and knowing that it's okay to feel that. Because as if artists didn't have enough pressure, like, that's also the thing of, like, you shouldn't feel this way. It's like, no, that's fine. It's okay to be gentle with yourself in this way. And I think going forward, like what Eloise is saying of, like, define how you measure your success for yourself. Like, for me, for so long, I felt so much shame in being a barista as my day job. But now here I am, like, 6+ years into it, like, getting hired to start open a new shop. And, like, I'm an expert in that field, which is cool. And it's brought me a lot of joy. I think in a way, like, just as our society has these definitions of success, like, you graduate and you get a high paying job and then you move to the Hamptons, retire in Florida. We also have definitions of failure, like, that. For me particularly, like, I got a sense, like, our society had that stigma that working at a coffee shop specifically and being an artist was failure, you know? So I had to conquer that as well.
Well, and I think going off of that, maybe a good measure to keep in mind is whether the thing that you are measuring yourself, like, the measurement of success or being good, is that draining to you? Or is it draining to the people around you? Like, I mean, Clara, like, you were talking about, like, very prestigious places that everyone gets a lot meaner. I mean, at that point, is that even in an environment, is that even the best thing for you?
It's not.
Like, it may look good to other people, but if, like, what's the point? Like, we're all going to die at some point in our lives, and then none of this will matter.
Well, you know? When you put so it you that way, Eloise.
Listen, I am actually an optimist sometimes.
I call it optimistic pessimism. You know, yes. The truth, and then you go forward with that.
No, the point that I'm trying to make is that, I mean, why torture yourself if, like theoretically, you're torturing yourself because you want to be happy, But if the process of getting there isn't doing it.
Yeah.
Well, like, and also, I just think that things are not so obviously this is wrong. Because here's the thing. I did this stream, and you guys can watch it. It's called An Art Job Can Ruin Your Studio Practice, okay? I was talking to my RISI students all day today. We did our final critiques, and oftentimes they do talk to me about their concerns about the future and about trying to get a job and everything. And a lot of them say to me, oh, well, maybe the way for me to get a job as an artist is do concept art, and I can paint backgrounds for an animation studio or something like that. And so I think at art school, sometimes people hold up a job like that in very high regard. Like, whoa, you work at an animation studio. Oh my God, you are a success. Well, you know something? My husband worked in an animation studio a year right after he got out of art school. He was at an animation studio. And Eloise, if I told you, oh my God, Eloise, Danny got a gig at an animation studio a month out of graduation, would you be impressed?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. You would think, wow, Danny really kicked butt, right? Well, guess what? My husband had this animation job, and he was so exhausted from animating all day long at the job that, you know what, the whole time he worked at that studio, never made his own work, ever. And so it basically destroyed his studio practice. Whereas Alex, you have a studio practice. You have made so much work in the time that you've been a barista. Why do you think you're able to do that? And yet my husband at the animation studio, the supposed, wow, great job, was not able to do it. How come you can do it?
I think that it's, I subconsciously kept track of like what my end goal was of making, this is speaking a lot more forethought than my 23-year-old self had, but I had that image of like, I always wanted to make my work, like that essentially like told my story. And I allowed myself to do that like with my own practice and kept that as like my safe space. And even in the times when I was most bummed out about it, I loved that still to me priceless luxury of being able to turn down a job that I don't like or agree with. Yeah. And not always in a spiteful way. Like I love this story from an old professor of mine who was offered a job to do an illustration for Camel cigarettes. And he was morally opposed to smoking. And he made the very clear point, which is worth sharing, where he didn't respond to them with all caps, like, how dare you, you're killing people. Like, well, because that's not a good professional practice. He just said, I'm sorry, I'm busy, and went about his way. But yeah, like, and it's about finding out, I think, how you work and what you want your work situation to look like. Like, if you like that hustle and that grind and that team effort, then yeah, an animation studio would be your happy place.
For sure. And here's the thing. So we are working on this event, the Art Prof 2020 graduation, which we are super excited about. And when you guys work on a project like Art Prof, where you don't have a $3 million budget and a huge studio building, and Alex and Eloise don't get massages in the middle of the day, you have to ask a lot of people for favors, okay? So for the Art Prof 2020 graduation, I have been asking a lot of favors of people who are friends, some people who are colleagues, and I actually did call a couple, well, didn't call, but I got in touch with some people totally out of the blue, no connection whatsoever, who are not like Brad Pitt famous, but who are famous in the field, okay? And so I had one person who wrote to me and said, well, I charge $3,000, and for me to even consider it, I have to be at the top of the field, and you have to highly publicize my presence in the event. And I just said, bye-bye. I'm like, I don't care how famous you are not worth my time right now. I had some other people who were wonderful, who did a great job, and you know something else? I had somebody else who knocked it out of the park. I wrote to them in an email. I said, you know what? I asked you for a pebble and you gave me a mountain. And this is a pro bono thing. I did not pay anybody to participate in the stream. And at the end of the day, it's like, Eloise, which person do you want to be? Do you want to be the person who is at the top of the feed because you paid them $3,000? Or do you want to be the class act that did something that really is going to have an impact on people who need it?
Yeah, I think, yeah, the latter, obviously the latter. 100%. And this is probably a good moment to say that if you are a graduating BFA or MFA student, you should submit your work to Art Prof Graduations so that we can feature you alongside these wonderful class acts of human beings.
It's pretty exciting. It's on June 7th. It's going to be a live stream. Let's see. 10,000 Crows says, them, help us advertise our cigarettes. Him, first of all, how dare you? Let's see. Annie is saying, I love studying non-art related things in school because I can be productive in academics and independent artwork without getting burned out. Both are still exciting. And let's see. Looks like Albert and Lauren are talking about fine art residencies. Albert got their first artist residency at SVA. Very cool. That's so exciting, you guys. Woo. Awesome. I just love it when stuff like that happens. So yeah, I guess I would just say that in the end, I don't think things are as catastrophic as they are in our head when we ask a question at work. Like, okay, Alex, I'm sure you've had to ask me a question on Art Prof at some point about something over the past 5 years. And my response is always, okay, how can I get Alex the information he needs as quickly as possible to help him get it done? I honestly don't have time to think, oh, Alex, you don't know the difference between Reeves BFK and Arches. Oh my God, who are you? You're not an artist. And even if I was a jerk and I did think that, who cares? I mean, I don't know. I just think that we need to relax a little bit as artists. Easier said than done, though.
Key is realizing that everyone is going around with these voices in their heads telling them that they're not good enough and telling them that they've messed up constantly. And just if you remember that, it means that you can give yourself permission to keep ambling along your own path in your own way. Optimism. I'm an optimist.
Except we're all going to die, right, Eloise?
We are all going to die, Clara.
Last Days is saying, why can't we donate on the live chat? You can, Last Days. So if you guys look in the live chat box, next to the emoji symbol, there's a little dollar sign. And if you click on that, you can give us something called a super chat on YouTube, which is just basically like a tip jar. So if you guys want to send us a super chat and give us some love, we would love that because we're trying to stay alive. I know, I'm sorry to be dramatic, but it's sort of true. We need to stay alive as an Art Prof. Let's see. Michael says, maybe the Art Prof staff could speak or do demonstrations at art events, give the audiences the opportunity to donate. I do quite a few of those, Michael. I do a lot of lectures. I don't tend to do demos as much because they're very time consuming and they take a long time to prepare compared to the lectures. But I'll tell you, people don't usually donate at events like that because they're there to get the information, get the workshop and the lecture and stuff like that. So we have not found that to be an effective audience. Yeah. So, and you know something, you guys, actually, you know something? I'm such a liar. You know where I did feel imposter syndrome? This is Art Prof. That's where I felt imposter syndrome. You know why? Because I went to art school to be a figurative oil painter, okay? I was one of those people who was like afraid to ever open a camera because I was like worried something would go horribly wrong, which it usually did, okay? And I remember the first time I was on set trying to take apart a tripod, my husband, Alex, he was just horrified. He just was like, oh my God, the union would like sue you in 2 seconds because of what you did. I was like, sorry. So I started Art Prof with no production experience. I'd never edited anything. I do all the editing now. No sound design, nothing. I didn't know anything about media or YouTube or anything like that. And guys, that fake it till you make it thing, it is not a myth. And you know something? It can work. I mean, Alex, we did some faking at the beginning of Art Prof, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. like faking at that time when you first asked me to join, and I was deep in my imposter syndrome, and I was like, got home from working at a coffee shop and was like, sure, I'll teach people stuff, not thinking I had anything valuable to contribute.
That was really your first reaction, Alex?
Yeah, like, was like, why me? Like, like,
at least now I'm really curious. Now I gotta ask you, did you have imposter syndrome when you joined the art prof team?
I mean, absolutely, Clara.
Well, I didn't know these things. You never told me that before.
I mean, I was about a year or so out of my undergrad. I had no real work experience other than one-off like gigs that I was doing for clients. I was extremely depressed for a lot of reasons. And here was this opportunity to be sort of a public person supporting a community. And I was just like, I don't have any experience doing this, and I'm not good enough to do this, and why would they even be interested in me? Also, like, even though I never had you in school, Clara, like, I knew you by reputation as this like amazing teacher, and I was like, oh my god, like, why would she even like look at me? So
well, apparently I did, and it did work out. So Alex and Eloise, I'm sure at some point you guys got over your imposter syndrome working at ArtProf. Was there a moment where you said, you know what? I can do this. I can teach people how to do things. Come on, Alex. You must have had that moment at some point.
I think I did. And that came as it went along, where it was like, oh, like teaching art for high schoolers in the summer here, like teaching ArtProf long enough there, like talking with friends about art here. But I do have to give credit for that, like, secret, like, not very dramatic answer to a lot of mental problems that I have, is like, they never fully go away, and that you eventually just have to embrace them and live with it. So it's like, yeah, like, I would lie if I said before every single stream we do, there wasn't that little blip of like, you're not good enough to do this. And you just have to be gentle with that and remember your goal, and then move past it.
Eloise, did you have a moment where maybe we shot a certain video or we did a certain stream where you said, I got this?
I think that the first time I went to film with you and we did the whole like production setup, I think it was the Coptic Stitch tutorial, and I was like, oh, okay, this is something I can do. But honestly, like, it really wasn't until we started getting actual feedback from you guys, the viewers, saying that the things that we had to say were actually helpful and interesting to you, that I really started to believe it. Because, like, talking about this kind of experience, in my head, it's just, like, obvious that this is how I might be feeling, or these are the steps that we have to take. But I think I can speak for all of us that we're always, like, surprised and humbled when people say that it's meaningful to them to hear things that seem obvious to us, but in reality, like, we're just going around feeling like imposter syndrome and feeling like the things we have to say don't actually have meaning or impact.
Thank you so much to Lauren and 10,000 Crows for your super chats. Always appreciate your support. Victoria is saying, all of you being so humble and honest is very inspiring. Christina says, this gives me hope. I got my MFA in 2015. I've gone on residencies. I had a few shows, but feel like still driving a bus for a living makes me a failure. Don't feel that way, Christina, because the world does not work like that. Because maybe to some people, you are the person that drives the bus. But to somebody else, they don't even know. Like, okay, here's an example. I was talking to somebody today, and I actually had no idea that they had a famous parent. And they talked to me like, I thought you knew. And I'm like, no, I have no idea. I'm like, I'm clueless. And so they looked at me like, really? You're seeing me totally unvarnished without thinking about my very famous relative? And I could see how important that moment was for them to realize that people can see you in different ways. It just depends on the context, right? So I would think about that. Evan is saying, I think the best thing
Wait,
about
I
Art
just
Prof for me, it inspires me to draw again, even if it's just following along with a video or doodling along. Honestly, guys, if we can get you to pick up a pencil and make a mark, I've done my job. I mean, yeah, it's great if you learn about lighting and atmospheric perspective and linear perspective, but if I can get you to pick up a pencil, that is extremely powerful. So good for you, Evan, for making that happen. So what I would say, you guys, those of you in the audience, I think maybe Eloise, what you're saying about getting the feedback from the audience is it's like you don't believe it till you see it. You need to see it like in front of you. Something really concrete. Because you know what I do all the time is I oftentimes I'll call up my former professors who are older than me and I'll tell them something that I totally know the answer to. And I'm like, I don't even know why I'm asking them. I know the answer, but it's like I just want to hear them say it to me and say, yes, Clara, yes, that is correct. I don't know. Did you ever do that with me, Alex? I don't know.
Actually, like that feeling of validation is always good, which I think for everyone, like viewers, Art Prof, and everything, is to remember that, how good it feels to have that validation. And yeah, like that feeling of like with the comment of like the MFA artist slash bus driver, like it's that thing of if we're in the position to do it, if we're like. Than to be an advocate to people of what being an artist really is, I think is important. Like not being afraid to declare, like, yeah, like I'm fill in the blank and an artist. Because I think it shows the complexity of people from both sides. It shows that being an artist isn't always glamorous, and it shows that, you know, not every barista is just a barista, you know?
Yeah, and I think that we also need to get past that place in our society where like we or specifically in like the art world where we somehow like shame people for their survival jobs. 'Cause like the reality is like you're not going to be able to sustain like if you don't have like a trust fund or like fancy connections or whatever. Like you need a job and there's nothing to be ashamed of with like literally doing a job like every other person in the world since the beginning of time has had to do. And I think that there's this real like judgment of that. Like everyone's got to go around pretending and posturing like they aren't doing the hustle to like get by. And I think that we would all be a lot healthier if we kind of celebrated that as like an integral part of being an artist.
Starving Artist says imposter syndrome. Oh, yes. Taught art 18 years, wondered each week if I was, quote, really teaching well. Students like classes, but I was the one not sure at times. Yoda, do or do not, there is no try. Yes, there's a lot of wisdom there. And Eloise and Alex, okay, this warms my heart. Neil is saying, I've been doing art every day because of Art Prof. That is like, oh, getting a little teary, Neil. It's so dramatic. Calm Cuke is saying, I've learned more from three Art Prof live drawing streams I've watched than 2 semesters of drawing at my university. I will take that. I like this thing where you guys just tell us we're awesome. Can we just do this all the time? Malik says, thank you guys for doing this broadcast. You're helping a lot of folks here. And Lisa H says, my local museum, the McNay, showed paintings by one of the guards. I wonder if he felt like an imposter. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of museum guards who are artists. I went, when I taught at Wellesley College, there was somebody who had just gotten a full-time professor position there who was a museum guard literally 2 years before that. Within 2 years, she went from being a museum guard to a highly regarded studio art professor at a major university. So you guys, you just don't know. So if you guys are feeling that imposter syndrome, we've all been there. We are there with you, and you are definitely not alone in that situation. We are going to be in Discord in about 5 minutes because, you know, we got to have our little Art Prof powwow after every single live stream. But in about 5 or 10 minutes, Alex, Eloise, and I will head into Discord. So if any of you guys have more questions or things you want to share with us, we'd be happy to hear that. Check out artprof.org. Lots of information there on the spring raffle. and also the graduation stream. Subscribe to our channel and join the Art Prof family. And thank you so much to our top Patreon supporters. The spring raffle is your opportunity to become a Patreon supporter and get all kinds of fun goodies. Everybody, please stay safe. We'll see you next time.